Hello, and welcome to the Vergecast, the flagship podcast of TheVerge.com.
That'd be great. That would be great.
Hello, and welcome to the Vergecast, the flagship podcast of TheVerge.com. I think it's time that we retire the scissor vodka joke because LG blew it. That's where I'm at.
We need a new joke.
We need a new joke. And we're going to spend the next hour of your life trying to come up with one while we talk about technology and culture.
But anyway, the good news is that we get a good joke once a year or so.
Once a year. And then we grind that joke into a fine powder.
So don't worry. We'll come up with something.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Anyway, I'm here. I'm Nilay Patel. Paul Miller's here. Hey,
hello.
Paul. Dieter Bohn is here.
Hi.
And Ross Miller's here.
Hey, what up?
Paul's brother.
Exactly.
It's great. Good relation. But Ross reviewed the Nintendo Switch this week, so we're going to get deep into his brain. Dieter licked part of the Nintendo Switch. That's a real thing. He licked portions of this device. And yeah. It tastes bad. We're going to talk about that too. But first, I have some exciting news. The Vergecast, the show that you're listening to, if you are going to South by Southwest, you can come watch us do it live twice. At South by Southwest. We're taping two live episodes of this show at South by. We're doing it with National Geographic. They're taking what the Vulcan Gas Company and they're like rebranding. It's like South by. So brand activation. But the Vulcan Gas Company, which is a place that you can find on a map, is going to be like the big National Geographic experience at South by. They got a stage. We're going to be on that stage. We're doing the show live. And our friends at Recode are going to be taping some of their podcasts live there as well. So if you're at South By, on March 10th, you can come watch Recode Media with Peter Kafka. On March 11th, Lauren Good, who's on the show all the time and has a great podcast, you can watch her do Too Embarrassed to Ask. On March 12th, you can come watch The Vergecast. We'll be there. On the 13th, Kara Swisher will be doing Recode Decode. And then on the 14th, we close it all out, The Vergecast one more time. So The Vergecast live at South By, March 12th and March 14th. If you're going down there, you come to Austin, eat a taco, you know, just get settled, and then come watch our show, it'd be great. So that's the big news. We're very excited about this. It'll be fun. And then we'll put the audio of it on the internet. So if you're not at South By, you can experience it on a delay.
Two in 1 week. That's crazy.
The deal with seeing the Vergecast live is we have a reputation to maintain of being terrible.
Yeah.
So all the good stuff never actually makes the internet. We cut all the good jokes out and only put out the bad jokes. So if you come see us live,
we promise it'll
be entertaining.
It's kind of a best of worst stuff.
It's going to be a real situation. But yeah, if you're coming to South By, come see us. It'll be fun. Okay, let's get into it. Ross.
Yes.
Should I buy a Nintendo Switch? You've got I can see Ross on Skype. The people are just listening, but he's got one.
I'm literally like half paying attention, half playing. Also making these beautiful clicking noises into the microphone.
Because
I mean, we did the video review of it, and it's seriously the one thing that Dieter and I have been absolutely obsessed with, which is the sound of the audio.
Yeah.
I've been obsessed with when it's in kickstand mode and you push a cartridge down into it, if you push too hard, the kickstand flies off and you need to reattach it.
That's a fun little effect.
It's flung across
the
room.
So explain this review situation to me, because we have the hardware, we have Zelda.
Yes,
you have been playing Zelda, but there's like a whole software component that's happening.
This is like, I don't want to get too like media weedsy, but here's the basic gist that myself and every other person that did a review yesterday kind of hit with. What happened is we got the hardware, we got Zelda. Some people got 1-2 Switch, like the hand wavy party game thing, but there was no internet, no friend codes, no online games, no digital shops. So we couldn't play anything else either. That finally came this morning. We're recording Thursday. Unfortunately, the review embargo was the day before, and the launch of it is tonight. So we've done what's basically an in-progress review. There's no score. We realized there's a lot of missing pieces. We kind of had basically wait until Nintendo finished the software.
Yeah.
And the hardware is great, and if you love Zelda, it's great.
The hardware is really good.
Okay, fine. It's really good. It's not great.
The feel, like, so here's the deal.
Uh-oh.
The feel of the hardware is great. I think the line that Ross put in his review, which is the smartest thing he's ever written, is that it's amazing how many pitfalls that Nintendo avoided.
By that he means he actually wrote that line.
there are a million completely
classic editor
things
trick
that could have gone wrong in building a hybrid mobile console system with like little controllers that click off the sides. Just a million things that could have gone wrong. And Nintendo avoided almost all of them, with a couple of exceptions that are like kind of boneheaded. It has some like frame rate drops when it's connected to TV trying to push out 1080p video.
I mean, it does that too a little bit, like mobile as well.
To me, the biggest...
Wait, it has frame rate drops when it's mobile?
No, when it's on the TV.
No, but Ross just said it had frame rate drops on mobile.
I can make that happen a little bit on Zelda, like pushing it a little bit.
The biggest problem is, you're going to laugh, the placement of the power jack is on the bottom, and so you can't plug it in and set it up in kickstand mode and use it. You can only like have it on your lap and use it having it plugged in.
Huh.
I'm also just here it comes.
You have a bitter taste in your mouth.
It doesn't run WebOS. huge mistake.
It doesn't seem to be using standard USB power delivery for power. So batteries that I know are able to provide USB PD power for fast charging only seem to trickle charge this device.
Huh.
Similarly, it's not using standard USB for HDMI out, because standard USB to C to HDMI things don't actually do anything.
Which is to say, we can't use a third-party dongle to take this on the go. We have that docking connector. That's basically the only option.
I bet that is a copyright thing.
Oh, I'm sure there's some kind of proprietary handshake. It'll be figured out with a...
Yeah, Nintendo's the company that doesn't want to pay for the license to play DVDs on their systems.
Yeah. Right, that's like, they're like, whatever, we built our own. We're going to take the margin on it.
But looks like USB-C.
What would the copyright thing be? Like, let's play videos? I guess that's going to be a real question. You can do HDMI capture if it's in the dock.
You can do HDMI capture, no problem.
Yeah, no, I think it's more of a can we sell you a Nintendo licensed dongle later?
Yeah. Dongles are the future of the hardware industry, right? Mm-hmm. What you do is you take the ports off and then you sell the people the ports back.
So this is something that we haven't talked much about on the show, but the Switch is a cartridge-based system.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Does it seem like it, or does it seem like you're getting like SD cards? Like, because something that's really frustrated me is like install times are getting ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. There's zero install.
Well, for Zelda, there's no install.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's kind of fun. That's kind of exciting.
But can you buy games? Can you buy digital games too, or is it all cartridges all the time?
Oh, you can buy games. You can buy Zelda from the store. You don't actually need to use cartridges. Yeah, you can do everything digital.
But here's the problem. It only has 32 gigs of storage on the device. And Zelda, for example, is what, 13 and a half
gigs? 13 gigs, but...
And the system itself takes up 7 gigs. And so there's no way to like download a library of games without buying one or several big-ass micro SD cards.
Right. If you're buying a Switch in Japan right now, there is one game that is 32 gigs large. Like, you can't even... purchase it until like you get an expansion.
Do you feel like right now the CEO of Case Logic is like, we're back? He's like called the all hands meeting. He's you thought it was over, but I told you to hold fast. We've been through some ups and downs.
Keep your sewing machines warm.
Yeah, it's a good day for them.
But just to be clear, let's say I bought Zelda in the store.
Mm-hmm.
Does it come in a DS case?
It comes in a big-ass DVD size case, I think.
Okay.
Right, it's not as wide as a DVD case. So if you're actually stacking it up to like your Blu-ray discs or your PlayStation 4 cases, it's going to look awkward. It's also comically big for the size of the game card itself. But there's just no love for either side of it.
The game cartridges are like slightly bigger than a standard size SD card.
Give or take.
Yeah.
So then you take the cartridge out. You take the cartridge out and you plug it into the system, and then it just bam, you're playing a game. Like like a Super NES.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, there's a load time. I think no more than maybe 15 seconds at times. But
I'm just
translating.
I'm putting the cartridge in the system.
Yep.
This is so exciting.
Yeah. And I'm hitting the home button.
Wait, show me the screen. Show me the screen.
With Chris Plant's profile, and the game is now launching.
Yep.
There it is. Dieter,
there it is.
For those of you listening in your car, what Dieter is doing right now is lying to
us. He's not playing Zelda yet.
It did take a little bit longer. Okay, there you go.
Wait, but that's just the title screen.
Yeah, well, I think it had to switch user profiles. The point is, when you put a cartridge in, you don't have to like install a bunch of stuff locally to play the game.
Right.
That's what I mean by there's no
So
install.
That 32 gigabytes won't be eaten up. Because like with the Wii U... There would be like day one updates for games, or like the Mario Kart update was like 12 Paul? Gigabytes or Paul? Something like that. What?
Now that the Nintendo Switch is out, we do not speak of that previous console. it does not exist. I'm so sorry. Completely gone.
So there was a really interesting Bloomberg story today. It's funny how Nintendo is kind of going to different parts of its audience with different parts of the Switch story. So like Ross was saying, the nerd review sites got Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were like, Ross Miller, you're reviewing the Switch. Here's Zelda. This was fine for you. And then like the mainstream sites that reviewed the Switch got 1-2 Switch. Like the Wall Street Journal got 1-2 Switch. And, you know, their piece was great, but it was all about like, this is a console for everyone. You know, it's like it was a different audience. And then Nintendo, there's a good piece in Bloomberg, and it was all about Nintendo's investors and the future of the platform, right? And so Nintendo's like managing this message very carefully. And the investors are pretty rattled by the Switch.
Really?
Yeah. Like it was just a really interesting piece in Bloomberg. Obviously, the concern is that they've released a tablet so that it competes with the iPad. Like there's this feeling that mobile gaming, that what this thing is trying to do is compete with mobile gaming. I don't have that feeling at all. Right, I think of this as a console that kind of moves around.
I feel like they found this one specific spot that has never truly – it's been attempted but has never succeeded. Like the closest equivalent to this is the Vita.
Yeah.
Or on the other side, like attaching handles to an iPad.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting how they're trying to message a thing, and I think they're having a hard time. What I'm perceiving from all of us is a lot of excitement. We just talked – for 5 minutes about putting a cartridge in a slot. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, right. When are we ever excited that much about a piece of hardware or software? So that's, like, really cool. I'm excited to, like, buy one. Ross, you, like, ran around and played it. Like, did you ever think I could be playing an iPad right now? Or, like, this is less convenient than my – was that even a part of your consideration of the thing?
No, because, like, to me, like, this still feels like a different kind of game, right? Like, I do like iPhone and iPad games, but they're also, like – they're designed differently, it feels like. This felt like more like a console game.
Right.
So I got that kick out of it. And the thing that always kills me with the Bloomberg stuff is like, and Nintendo, you know, wisely has always had that dedicated game console. 3DS was sold almost 70 million, and mm-hmm. it was created and like sold throughout the like the lifespan of iPhone gaming. So like, I think this will do well. I think this will be fine.
Yeah. That's just interesting.
It's different, yeah.
The idea that this launch is happening and there's so much excitement in nerd world.
Mm-hmm.
And out in kind of like mainstream consumer world, they're having to show 1-2 Switch and like try to recapture that Wii energy. And then out in investor world, they're trying to prove that this is a good idea, period. Those are interesting disconnects to me. We don't usually see that. Usually when the nerds are excited, the investors are like, you're going to sell a lot of these.
Hmm.
Right.
Just a thing. So Dieter, you put a cartridge in your mouth. Ross, I believe you did as well.
What? Actually, no. So by the time I got back to the office,
Dieter everyone in the office,
yes, like Dieter and like half the Vox Media office had licked both cartridges to the point where like there was just no bitter taste.
The coating
left.
Went away.
I think so. It wasn't that bad when I tried it.
That's interesting.
So Polygon got the scoop, started, right?
Well, no. So Giant Bomb got the scoop. Jeff Gerstmann tried it last week.
Oh, reason why.
Scoop. Oh, it's because it's coated in Bitrix, which is like the thing that you put on things so the babies don't eat them because it tastes awful.
Yeah.
Or it's like something like Bitrix.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, it took about 4 hours for the taste to get out of my mouth.
Wow.
It was unbelievably atrociously bad. It was just awful.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it just took forever. It tasted like spraying bug spray directly on my tongue.
Wow.
It's terrible. Ross, anything? Yeah. Tell us about Zelda. That's actually the thing I want to know. Tell me about Zelda.
Right, because that's the only reason to get it right now. And I think it's great. Yeah. Like,
great review by Andrew Webster on TheVerge.com.
Yeah, Andrew did a great job with it. Also, poor Andrew, who's been doing GDC here in San Francisco, managed to put 50, 60 hours in the game
mm-hmm.
in the last 4 days, maybe five.
His job sounds terrible. Oh, my God.
Poor sleepless
I'm
Andrew.
I'm such a terrible boss that makes everyone work so hard. it's true.
You know, it's a different feeling.
These guys are at an event. Yeah. Andrew's away from his family. It's like a whole thing. But he's playing on the go.
He's playing on the go. He can play anywhere he wants. Yeah. It's great. It doesn't feel like any of the old Zeldas. It's very much, they don't kind of tell you what to do. They say, here's Link. You have a sword. That sword's going to break, so go pick up another one. And don't die. Like, it's very much, we're going to just let you explore. Every other Zelda game was like, go to dungeon, get a grappling hook, kill a guy.
Is there a narrative to this game, or are you just like an elf with a dream?
No, there's a pretty big narrative.
No, Jesus Christ, Neelai. What are you doing?
He's got the ears.
What is he if he's not an elf?
He's a Kokiri.
Okay, Paul, you also thought Link was an elf.
Yes.
I mean, not really. I thought he was an elf, too.
What
Hold
is he?
On.
A
he's
Hyrulean?
Not a Kokiri. He hung out with the Kokiris. He's a Hyrulean, yeah.
But that's his nationality.
When you say elf, people think of like Lord of the Rings elf.
There's everybody knows that there's Keebler elves, and there's Link elves, and there's Lord of the Rings elves. There's a spectrum. Yeah.
There's a lot of different elves.
Of elfishness.
Hold on. Is Link an elf?
He's a Hylian.
I don't want to try to sound too clever here, but I will say from reading Andrew's review, and I have literally not touched this game, but it kind of sounds like they did the same thing where they found this like perfect little, it's like they played a dangerous game, because I was looking at this game and was like, well, this looks like a dumbed down Skyrim. And if I want to play Skyrim, I'll just play Skyrim. So why would I get this? But like, it sounds like they captured what was really great about Zelda and captured what's really great about having open world, open ended sort of Skyrim situation.
Right. Like, you know the thing that I always hate about Skyrim?
Wait, just to be clear, there's a lot of information on the internet about Hylians versus Hyruleans. Hyruleans are people that live in the land of Hyrule who may be of any race.
Are you on Zeldapedia right now?
I'm on Zelda Wiki.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hylians are a race, and there's humans, Gorons, and Zoras, and Hylians.
Yep.
Yeah. And Hyruleans
are other races.
Huh?
Okay. Well, no, like, because like Gorons and Zoras are different races than the Hylians.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So Link is an elf. Like, I just want to just be clear.
No. No.
Link is a fucking elf.
I swear to God, I'm going to quit.
Physically, Hylians resemble humans, and the only difference appearance-wise between them is the Hylians' long elf-like ears.
Deer looks so mad. Anyway, so
unacceptable.
Ross.
Yeah. So to Paul's point, like games like Skyrim and Fallout, they always just seem big for sake of being big. Like everything's kind of lifeless. A lot of character models feel like kind of repetitive. This does feel like a Zelda game in the sense that you're wandering around and like. A lot of it just feels like there's a lot of touch and care. Like, I didn't feel like I was seeing the same dungeon over and over again at the same moment. Like, it felt like it was big because they just had that much to do and not, like, that much to show.
Yeah. But does it drive you through a narrative, or is it just...
There's a large narrative.
But it doesn't drive you. That's the thing.
Yeah, like, there's a very large narrative. Like, after what essentially feels like a 2 to 3 hour, like, tutorial, that they kind of let you, like, open up the world. And then it's like, you can do these things, like... Here are 4 things you should definitely do to save the world. Good luck. And then, give you direction. Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, you can wander around. There is this one quest at the beginning, like a small spoiler, like 5 hours in, where you go to Kokiri Village and they tell you that, you know, Link, you got to go find your elf parents to prove your elf life.
No, but that's just a thing. That's just a thing Hyruleans say.
Yeah,
It's
a term of endearment.
Yeah, it's a national holiday, Elf Parents Day.
Yeah. But yeah, the gist is like, I like the Switch. I would definitely buy it just to play Zelda, but I'm also kind of in like the minority for that. Beyond this game, like, it's kind of hard to say when the next big thing's gonna come out, right?
1-2 Switch is terrible.
1-2 Switch is awful. Like, we do have a copy of it.
Yeah,
yeah, we have a copy. We've been trying to play it. It's just. Bad.
I don't think it's going to hold my, 4-year-old niece's attention.
And the fact that it's a $50 standalone game is ridiculous.
Wow. Why is it not the pack-in?
They really screwed that one up.
It's really bad. But the couple, other games you get in the shop are pretty good. Nintendo is promising one new independent game a week. That could be great.
Stardew Valley sounds pretty exciting to me.
That would be fun. Blaster Master.
Blaster Master Zero!
Dieter is inordinately excited about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so but honestly, if you're not eager to play Zelda, I would just wait a month or two at least.
Yeah, well, there have been some connection issues with the Joy-Cons.
Yeah, we've not had that, but Polygon
everybody
had
else
it.
Has.
Yeah, I think Wired's Chris Kohler had that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's Nintendo, so you're gonna have to wait a month anyway.
Yeah, if you haven't already decided to buy one,
That's true.
And you
can't
have one unless you spend more than the list price.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like that for months. Maybe this is, they released it now so that by the holiday season,
they might be able
to sell some.
Yeah. Possibly.
That's what they did with the little, you know, Nintendo Classic. They released it before last holiday so that they might have them in stock in time for this holiday.
They didn't figure it out. That was a much simpler product. Anyway, that's very exciting. Okay. This episode of this show, The Vergecast, is brought to you by Crizal No Glare Lenses. It's happening again. If you wear glasses, many of us do, then you know that fingerprints, smudges, scratches, and glares are a constant obstruction to your vision and a huge distraction. Sometimes you end up focusing more on what's on your glasses than what's going around you. That's why the people love Crizal No Glare Lenses. They give you the clearest vision possible by offering resistance to glares, scratches, and smudges. That means no more blinding glares from the headlights of oncoming traffic while driving at night, no more fingerprint smudges from taking your glasses on and off, or scratches from cleaning your lenses on your shirt. And because Crizal No Glare Lenses stay clear and reduce distracting glare, your friends and family can actually see your eyes and know that you're lying. Or telling the truth, whichever one it is, which you should do. So look better, feel better, most importantly, be prepared for whatever comes your way with clear vision. Go to Crizal.com to learn more. That's Crizal.com. Live life in the clear. I screwed up their tagline. It's start living life in the clear. Amazon went down. Should we talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So it was down for like an afternoon,
four-ish hours.
And when we say Amazon, what we actually mean is Amazon's S3 cloud services, upon which
East One.
Yeah, a vast majority of, I don't know, websites and apps that you've heard of depend.
Do you want to explain what you mean by East One?
Well, when you sign up for Amazon.
AWS.
For AWS, for any service that you do, you pick which region you want to host your stuff on. Now, if you really want to go crazy, you can set it up so that like it will like load balance and bounce around through all the different services. But most people, including apparently Amazon, don't set up that kind of redundancy. And East One is one of the primary OG original locations for storing a bunch of data that the internet relies on in S3 buckets, as they're called. It's supposed to be just like the static files, but so many of the dynamic operations of the internet rely on those static files. And it was just a cascading problem. Amazon has up an explanation of what happened, which was a typo by a programmer. It's a pretty good one.
It was like a routine sort of like morning.
Yeah, he's
command.
Like, I'm just going to turn off a few of these because we're going to change a thing. But he like maybe order of magnitude error. I don't know.
It caused cascading problems. Like they were supposed to take down a few servers in a support role, and then he took down too many. And then but he wasn't directly taking down the S3 servers, but the services that they took down, a few too many, and that caused other servers that depended on those services to like go down, and the whole thing cascaded out. And then it turns out that when a server goes down, you need to reboot it, and that ended up taking a long time because they needed to do all the checks to make sure that they would come back live properly.
How do you think he's feeling today?
Who? Like,
the dude that made the typo.
Not great.
Just like a little stressed?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's fine.
Yeah,
it's back now. I mean, like, I will say Tuesday. It was Tuesday. It was very hilarious.
Mm.
Like, the people reacting to Amazon being down was actually quite funny, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm sure that huge number of companies that actually lost money because their shit didn't work, they were probably not writing funny articles about is it down right now being down. But Casey did, and I thought that was great. What are you going to say, Paul?
Well, so many people were down that for a lot of people, like, I'd be mad at you for being down, but I'm down too, so I'm busy doing that. So.
Yeah. I mean, like, our image service, like our asset manager, partially relies on S3. So we just had a long conversation about whether we should publish things without images for a while.
And
it was kind of like a vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, images are tyranny.
Interesting.
Just some thoughts.
Speaking of images. The tyrannical nature thereof. There's a bunch of sort of mobile news we should talk about. I think the most important, well, interesting piece of mobile news, the Galaxy S8, Evan Blass just leaked the whole thing.
Yeah.
There it is.
And that's
like, you can just look at it on the internet.
You look at the S8. It looks kind of like the LG S or G6.
Yeah.
Snip snip, and it looks a lot like what works. Like, there's a vague sense that that's what the fanciest of the fancy iPhones coming out later this year. You know, all the rumors seem to point to it being, curved screen, bezel-less, very tiny bezels on the top and the bottom.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what phones look like now. Mm. They have virtually or no bezel on the left and right, and they have incredibly thin bezels on the top and bottom. And that's what a phone is now.
Ashley turned to me the other day and held up her iPhone and said, "This is just so ugly to me now."
Yeah.
Like, oh,
the bezels are just,
it's out of control.
And now I can't look at my phone and think the bezels are just garbage. At least when the screen's off, you can't see them. You turn the screen on, it's like, oh, I can't.
I think we talked about this last week, 2 weeks ago. The whole re-architecture of the home button and Touch ID and the no more swipe to unlock, I feel like that's a big, like, user training for the next phone that gets rid of the bezel and maybe integrates it into the screen.
Mm.
But I was trying to use Apple Pay today. Even Apple Pay got slower. It's, like, way more confused about what I'm trying to do with the phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, were you trying to Meet Space Apple Pay?
Yeah.
Oh. Because I love it for, like, buying stuff on my phone.
No, I was, like, buying lunch, and I, like, waved my phone at the thing, and it unlocked the phone instead of paying because I had, like, clicked instead of didn't. Mm. It's, like, they've got to just clean up around the edges of that interaction design. But the S8, though, we should get back to it.
Yeah, well, apparently they're putting a home button on the back, or they're putting a fingerprint sensor on the back in the same way that the Pixel and the LG have been doing for a while. Yeah. I think that's how Samsung's handling it. That's fine.
I think what's interesting to me, you did the G6 hands-on video. The S8 looks like it has the taller screen as well.
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting that vibe. And I think what they're doing on the G6 with the square camera previews.
It's genius.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
There's something there.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, you've been able to multitask on Android, on Samsung forever, and on Android since the latest version. And I just don't do it that much because, like, everything feels a little bit constricted. But on a super tall screen, I'm, more likely to do it.
You mean like split screen multitask?
Yeah, split screen multitasking. I'm with Dan Seifert on this one. I think I'm more likely to do split screen multitasking on a BlackBerry Key 1 than I am on a regular Android phone.
Why?
Because when you bring up the software keyboard, it doesn't occlude the bottom thing. That's just there.
But you're never going to purchase or own a BlackBerry Key 1.
Well, man, if
so, would say, so like the true percentage of likelihood gets multiplied by zero.
Everything about the
like,
Key 1
that's the Key 1 like operator.
Really, everything about the Key 1 is really smart except for the price. Like they kind of did everything they should have done. They've got BlackBerry software on there. I think that there's still some room to improve there. They, instead of going for the latest specs, went with the Snapdragon, I think it's 625, 620, whatever.
It's like
one
a baby
those.
One.
It's but it's the one that everybody loves on the Moto Z Play because it gets just bonkers battery life. And they put a really big battery inside this thing. So when you think of traditional BlackBerry, you think of keyboard. And back in the day, you used to think of it was the smartphone that got better battery life than everybody else, because it was. Back in the, the Curve Bold days, people would get a BlackBerry, not just for the keyboard, but because they knew the thing would last all day when an iPhone or a Windows phone wouldn't. And I think that this BlackBerry Key 1 is going to probably do that. But they're charging way too much money for it, for the specs that are on it.
Hmm. I mean, that's their brand, right? They're trying to, like, people who buy that phone have expense accounts.
Yeah. I suppose.
Right. Like a bunch of government types are going to buy that phone.
Yeah. I know I pivoted from talking about the S8 to the BlackBerry, but I mean, we do just know a bit more about the BlackBerry. I'm still really interested to see this DeX system on the Samsung. Is it going to be good when you dock it and get a desktop up? I'm really intensely curious to see if it does have a desktop class browser. What that browser is, if it's Chrome or if it's Firefox.
I bet it would be Firefox. Why would Google give them Chrome?
Yeah.
Right, and that's like licensing revenue for Firefox, for Mozilla, rather.
Right.
I can't imagine Google's going to give them Chrome if what they're Google's trying to do is get you to buy a Chrome OS laptop that runs Android. Like, it just doesn't seem like the Google move. Yep. But who knows? Chrome is technically open source. They could just write their own Chrome.
They could. Yep.
That'd be a thing.
But then it wouldn't, yeah.
Other mobile news, bunch of like Google Assistant stuff going on, right? So they,
yeah.
I mean, more phones are going to get it.
Yeah.
Like that.
And that's rolling out right now. So basically anything with Android 6 or 7 that has Google Play services should be getting it pretty imminently. It's starting with English and then it's going to other languages. There's some other random stuff. Android Police just put up a thing right before we started podcasting that multi-user for home code is starting to show up, so they're going to fix that.
Multi-user for home code.
The code in the Google Home app, the companion app for the Google Home, has code in it that indicates that they are actively working in multi-user, which they've promised, but now they're actually doing it.
Got it.
They also stuck
and that lines up with Amazon trying to do multi-voice recognition, right?
But yeah, like the Google Assistant coming to Android phones, I want to feel like is a really big deal, but the Assistant isn't so much different than just the voice button from before that I don't get that excited about it. The more exciting thing for me is long pressing the home button on Android 6 phones now does something actually useful instead of pulling up the screen grab feature.
There's literally nothing worse than the screen grab feature. It's so annoying every time. Because it makes the click sound, it flashes a screen at you, and then it's like, it looks like you're reading a web page. It's like, sure am, buddy. I don't know. But now it's going to be good. I mean, look, this is Google's future. They keep saying it's their, like, this is their big future. If they don't put it on the phones, they can't get there.
Right. And the fact that it's getting distributed through Google Play services instead of, like, requiring actual firmware updates is a big deal.
So I asked you about this before the show started.
Yeah.
I don't think they make a big enough deal about Google Play services. Like, the fact that they don't need Verizon or AT&T or Samsung or LG's permission to just roll out the core thing that is their new strategy and they can just put it on all the phones. I think that's a much bigger deal for the future of Android than we're paying attention to. And what I was asking earlier was, does Google tell people what the percentage base on the newest version of Google Play services is? Because I know they tell people how many people are running the newest Android. And it's always like 1% of people. But if everyone's running the newest Google Play services, that's almost more important. Deidre's just laughing at me.
That's because there's a ghostly TC staring at you from the window behind you.
TC's super ready to talk about net neutrality.
Yeah. The thing about Google Play services is like it's how they roll out security updates, which is a big deal. And it's also the more that they can unbundle from the core of the – I can't do this right now.
Oh, my God.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Our old producer, Creighton D. Simone, has rolled in to interrupt you. Even though I tried to shush him.
I wanted to interrupt to because the G6 was announced today, and I wanted to present you with a custom bottle of scissor vodka.
Oh, my God.
Whoa. Is this?
What the actual fuck?
Is this actually vodka?
It is actually vodka.
All right. Well, we will take some pictures and put it in the post.
Sealed bottle.
How did you make this?
With love.
This is amazing.
And care.
It says Best by July 2012 on it.
It's fine. It's new.
I will say, for people who can't see this right now, it looks legit.
It does look legit. It just definitely says Best by July 22nd, 2012 on it.
I think it says 2018, but that's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. You use it to clean things. Thank you, Creighton.
It's new vodka. It's for you.
It's really nicely made.
I lived with graphic designers. I learned through osmosis.
It's funny because we said we were going to retire the joke at the top of the show.
Well, this is perfect.
It's all
because
happening.
Then you can wash this joke away with a bottle of vodka on the rocks.
I mean, go get some cups. We'll drink some vodka.
Great.
Here. All right. It's going to happen.
Bye.
Guys, we're going to get donked on my custom vodka.
Okay, so I do want to make this Google services point. Because it is important. It's how Google is rolling out security updates.
Yeah.
It's taken a bunch of stuff that used to be built into the OS, and it's starting to unbundle it, which is great because it means they can update that stuff more often without waiting for carriers to approve it. But a little bit scary because it makes Google phone, like Android phones, Google phones more than they are like, you know, open source Android phones, whatever.
But that's been a debate like, for a long time.
Yeah, but Chrome is basically unbundled. They just announced that in future versions of Android, they're unbundling the SMS app. They're calling it Android Messages now. Rather than Messenger or messaging or whatever the hell it's called now. And that's going to be updated through Google Play services. And now they're able to update, you know, the Google Assistant. So more and more, Google's solution for this problem that a new version of Android comes out and nobody gets anything is to make the new version of Android less important than the unbundled apps that you can get updated directly via Google Play services. A playbook that Palm did first.
Oh, damn!
The longest con! The longest con!
I mean, isn't the whole point of apps is that you can upgrade them?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like every like, time look at, I want look a new at the feature, iPhone. I don't have to like,
every,
reinstall
every,
my
Every year, there's a new version of iOS, and there's all these like changes that are bundled into iOS, and we have to wait for the next version of iOS to get them, and they have to it has to get pushed out through this, you know, big-ass iOS update. They finally started to do like skinny updates that can like upgrade some of these apps on their own directly. So Apple doesn't have quite the same problem that, you know, Android has in terms of waiting for carrier approval because right. they've got more strength and they've got a better update system. But nevertheless, they tend to bundle a bunch of their app updates to like have a moment for the OS upgrade. And the thing that Google hasn't figured out yet is how can they create a different kind of moment surrounding these things that they're going to be able to push out to all phones that isn't the thing that we every consumer understands, which is like a new version of Android.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's silly. It's funny because it's a big moment when every year, new iOS version.
Yeah, and then your phone just starts randomly restarting. Like every your alarm clock gets fucked
battery
up.
Battery life goes to hell.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting. Just generally, I think that split is interesting. That, you know, Google rightfully, I think, gets criticized that they can announce a new version of Android and it doesn't matter right. to so many people. But I don't think they get enough credit for Google Play services. Like, we're just doing this, and then suddenly everything's updated.
I think Google could get a good hype cycle going if they could show up on stage and say, hey, we made this new thing. Look out for it next month. And then next month, like,
everybody gets it.
Like, 100 million people have it on their
That's
phone.
What they're doing with Assistant. They just kind of like, in Google
yeah,
fashion right
it,
now.
Like, how many years ago was Google? I guess it was like 1 year ago that Google Assistant was announced. How long ago was that? It feels like a long time to me.
It was October.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about a year.
I mean, technically that was last year.
October was a different time, man. Much different time.
I mean, I still don't have a goddamn Pixel.
I don't remember anything that happened.
Wait, I thought you got one.
I thought you got one.
No, I ordered one finally. I'm going to check the status right now.
It hasn't shipped yet? What are you doing, Google?
While we do this break, I will let the people know that right now, according to the poll, 50% yes, 50% no is Lincoln Elf.
Even split.
Dead time.
The country is divided. Who's going to bring us together on this elf issue? Who will unite Hyrule?
I wanted to bring, this is on the list of the links. It's not like I'm going off topic here, but James Vincent wrote up something everybody should read about 5G. It's kind of like this religious.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There's this amazing quote. The future of all things and the creation of time is the name of a talk you could attend at Mobile World Congress.
Oh, the
transformative power of 5G. I don't know. It's exciting. No, I'm excited.
No, the thing about but like there's no such thing as 5G yet. There's a logo and there's a promise of speed and nobody knows which network standard it's going to use. Right. And it's possible, perhaps likely, that especially in the US, we might end up with competing network standards. And I'm just going to say this right now. Don't go with whichever one Sprint chooses because we know how that goes.
Here's what I'm going to say. I ordered my Pixel on January 30th. The ship date has now been pushed to March 16th. What are they doing?
They're pulling a real Nintendo on you.
Give me this
It's a good thing they don't have any plans right now to make new Pixel laptops because they can't make anything called Pixel, apparently.
Well, no, that Osterloh quote at MWC is very strange. So Rick Osterloh, who runs Google's hardware division, I must say, has not done an excellent job of shipping me a phone. Rick, you know, pulled a bunch of reporters together at MWC, you know, and said, I think answered a question about Chromebook laptops and whether they're going to make their own Pixel.
Yeah.
It appears that he first said, no, we're done with it. Everybody reported it out and then came back around. Google sent us a statement. Osterlo tweeted today. What I meant to say is we don't have any plans at this time, which right. generally means we're never doing this again. But I think they were trying to deflate the Google's out of making its own laptop hardware.
I'm telling you right now, what they're making is some sort of Surface alike. They're making a Chrome tablet. I don't have any real evidence. There's no real rumors here. But you look at the work that they're doing on Chrome OS. You look at how much effort they put into making the stylus work. You look at the Android stuff that's coming. That is what I expect.
Hmm. So they're Pixel C2.
Yeah.
Which is probably what they'll call it because consumers love names like Pixel C2.
I'm curious about if they make a Pixel C2 in that same form factor, if they'll come up with a way to have the keyboard not scratch the hell out of the screen.
I just don't know what they're... I want Google to be in the game in a way that Google doesn't appear to be in the game right now. Mm. That's it. They're not executing well, I think. I said this to Walt on his show. They have a lot of great ideas, and then everyone gets all excited when they have the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like... We made it, and you're like, this is nothing. This is a box of wires that actually hurt me when I touched it, and
you can't even I can't ship get it in the one first
actually.
Place.
Yeah, this is awful.
I can't even get the box of wires that hurt me.
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. Last bit of mobile stuff, and then we can move on to the next thing. iPhone rumors happened this week in a really, I would like to say, dumb way.
Yeah,
like a particularly dumb way because it. Well, here's what happened. The Wall Street Journal reported the next iPhone will not have Lightning and switch to USB-C. But the wording in the piece was such that you could graft any hopes and dreams that you wanted on it. So everyone, instead of – they read the iPhone's dropping Lightning and go to USB-C into it. It was also worded in such a way that they're just switching the cable that comes with the iPhone to be a USB-C to Lightning cable, and they're going to adopt some of the USB-C – power delivery stuff for the phone to charge faster. You could literally read both of those things into it, and everyone read the thing that they want. Marquez
I prefer
Brownlee,
to believe it's they're hinting at augmented reality.
Yeah, of course, right? Because yeah, that's what else are they doing? Marquez Brownlee, our friend MKBHD, made a video entitled "Dear Apple," which is all about switching USB-C.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the nerdiest things. Like Marquez is a nerd. We're a nerd. We love his stuff. That video was trending on YouTube today because people want USB-C in the iPhone so badly.
It's not going to happen.
And then today, you know, the analysts were like, no, they're obviously just doing the USB-C cable. But it's just a right. moment, right, where people want the standards to work. And then
– By the way,
Apple Vlad
switching to USB-C on the other end of the Lightning cable
yeah.
Is going to piss so many people off.
Right, because USB-C-A is basically the new power socket around the world.
Right.
Okay. What about
and they're gonna ship it with a USB-C to USB-A dongle?
Oh my god!
And the world is going to explode.
Oh my god!
How about this
there's
compromise?
Gonna be, wait.
How
there's
about
gonna
this
be two
compromise?
Dongles.
Apple changes the plug in the phone to be USB-C, but they ship a charging cable that has Lightning on the other end.
You can charge a phone on the phone. Dieter, I actually don't think that it's gonna be.
They'll ship two
I
cables.
Bet a USB-A,
they'll ship a USB-A
Lightning
and
cable
a USB-C
charges the new iPhone just fine. Right? They can't be that dumb.
No, but I bet you what they do is they ship two cables. They ship a USB-C cable and a USB-A cable.
And the USB-C Lightning cable charges it super fast.
Right. And then if you have a new MacBook, you don't have to carry around a dongle to charge your iPhone. It'll plug right in. But they have to know that not very many people have USB-C laptops yet, and not very many people are excited about the idea of getting on a plane, wanting to plug their iPhone in, and seeing that that's a USB-C plug and it's a USB-A port.
Yeah.
And so they have to ship both
or
cables.
Or anywhere.
It's like the only solution.
Or
everyone's going to laugh dongles at me because I'm fond of universal standards that have been widely adopted. I'm sorry. It's just one of my personal flaws. But USB-C-A is like literally everywhere. We just bought lamps for our bedside that have USB-A power plugs in it. Like,
Do you live in a hotel?
No, they're just like, we don't like the wires. Like, we have a million wires because we charge a bunch of shit at night. So we're like, instead of buying one of those Anker blocks, we bought like very nice lamps. And they just have like little hidden USB ports at the back of them.
Okay, cool. That's clever. Yeah. I drilled a hole in the back. I sawed a giant ass hole in the back of my nightstand and then threaded a wire in it. So I've got one of the multi-anchor ports sitting in a drawer on my nightstand.
Yeah.
And I open my drawer, put all my crap in it, and close the drawer.
That's like a whole movie game. But like, I'm just saying, USB-A ports. Our desks in our new office, I will say, came with USB-A ports. They suck because they don't
not fast
offer enough power. But right. They're there. But it's just like they're everywhere.
Yep.
And like that transition, it'd be like if you change the regular power plugs in America. If like Apple was like, you know what? We're just not putting a regular AC plug on our laptops anymore and just use this
do
new
not
one.
Give them idea.
Here's a dongle.
Give them that idea because they will
that
totally.
Far down that road.
We're a decade into that road.
Are you
going to
be
everywhere.
A stick in the mud? Or are you going to go with the flow?
Here's love why universal I believe, standards, Paul.
Here's why I believe that this is happening. If you look at the AC adapters for all the MacBooks, the Pros and the new MacBooks, it has a USB-C plug on the adapter itself. The cable isn't attached right. to the adapter in the way it was on MagSafe, which means they want you to be able to plug other USB-C cables into that, aka the one that's going to charge your iPhone eventually.
Yeah. No, look, I think USB-C is great. And like, I have the, I think I've talked about that show 1,000 times. Like, I have a MacBook. Put away the adapter it came with. I bought an Anker adapter that has like 4 USB-A's and 1 USB-C. That is the best thing I travel with regularly. It is my favorite thing.
The other day I was trying to, I forget what it was. Yeah, it was like a weird a thing for making music by a company that I forget the name of.
Let's call it a keyboard.
It had buttons on it.
Were they in the shape of piano keys?
Stuff like that. They were not in the shape of piano keys. And it had a little hole in it.
Yeah.
That you plug the power into, and you needed like a brick.
Yeah.
Like it was like a 9-volt or so. I don't know. There's lots of voltages. So I go to my box.
I have one of those boxes.
I got that rat's nest of bricks that adapt that, you know, it's like.
And you know in your heart that you can never throw them away because that you need one.
Wall plugs are a nice universal standard that every gadget that plugs into them has to adapt from it to turn it into it, you know.
I think what you're doing right now is you're pitching me an article called Power Bricks Are the Original Dongle. Think about it. OG Dongle, the Paul Miller story. I'm not selling you on this at all.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Do you buy this curved screen iPhone rumor that the screen's going to curve around a la Galaxy Edge?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
I think that comes from like a weird patent that Apple did. Like, what if the screen went all
comes
the
from,
way around?
It comes from the analyst that everybody believes everything he says.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
I think they'll probably more aggressively curve the back. But I think the way Apple thinks about screens and cameras is so purist that introducing curve distortion into the screen doesn't feel like a thing that they will do. Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
yeah.
It just doesn't seem like they're like, watch movies on your iPhone. The top and bottom will be gently curved away from you. So just ignore that part.
Yeah.
Which I like when I hold Samsung's phones, I look at that. I'm like, that is more annoying than I want it to be. So I mean, maybe it's a way to make it thinner. They like making things thinner. But I just don't see Apple being like, here's our screen. It's partially distorted by the hardware. We invented it. It just doesn't seem like their move. It's also what Samsung is doing, and I don't think they want to walk into that trap either. Do you buy it, Paul?
I agree with everything you just said, and I hope that you're right.
Yeah.
Because it's one reason I would not want a Samsung phone.
Yeah. But like the reason I bring it up is, you know, rumor is they're going to get rid of the home button on the front. You press the whole screen, blah, blah, blah. Samsung will have released the Galaxy S8 by then. The G6, even though I know it's not going to make a big impact, is like going to be out as well. And when I said earlier that this is what phones look like now, whatever the hot shit this looks new iPhone is, looks like, will be probably a design that we've already seen for 6 months on Android, which is going to be a really interesting moment.
Yeah. And it's funny, the Huawei P10, like, announced at MWC, we'd have a hands-on with it. It looks like if you made another iPhone but like iterated the design, it just looks like the next iPhone of this lineage, like almost exactly. So I don't know. Like I think Apple's obviously very confident in this particular design. They've released 3 iterations on it now. But if they're going to make a move, I just expect them to make a more dramatic move than headed where Samsung's headed. All right, Paul.
Yeah, every week. I do a segment.
I like how you're just introing your own segment because I'm waiting.
It's called, Hey, Look at Me Now.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you got?
You should think about changing the name of that segment.
Sometimes I think about it. LG is coming out with a VR headset.
Oh, I saw this thing.
So it's Steam VR, right? So HTC was never the exclusive forever buddy. Mm-hmm. And so it works with the same Lighthouse technology and then uses the same VR technology, but it's a VR headset. But you can like slide it up.
Yeah.
So you can have it still mounted on your head, but raise the visor part.
Like a fighter jet helmet?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Which, if you've ever used VR, here's what you're doing. Especially once the motion controllers were introduced. You've got two motion controllers. There's a computer with a keyboard and mouse that you have to lean over. And then you have a thing on your head perched kind of on your forehead so that you can look at the – what always happens is it like squishes my like brow down and I'm and it's just so annoying. I don't know. LG might have solved it, might have cracked the case.
Yeah. What platform is it?
It's Steam.
Steam.
It's basically a Vive.
Yeah.
But made by LG instead of HTC.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
Do we know? Is it like are the hardware specs better or worse than Vive? Or is it
better
from factory?
They seem to be very, very similar as far as the field of view and the resolution. What Addy said is it's basically it's not the next generation VR headset.
Yeah.
It's another one of this generation, but with a cool thing where you can swing it up.
That'll probably be a little bit cheaper, I bet.
Hopefully.
Maybe.
Well, also, Oculus just dropped the price $200 on the Rift and Touch together, which is great for me because it's less than a month from when I bought my Rift and Touch. So I'm getting $200 back.
There you go. And you're going to spend it on this new LG one.
Yeah, I'm going to spend it on LG, but not have the lighthouses.
Oh, it doesn't have the lighthouses.
No, it works with lighthouses. I was trying to riff on the joke that we were doing. And
Let's all just sit here quietly for a minute. Okay, so we have two lightning rounds to end the show with. If you have been reading the site, you know that Jake Kastronakis and I, literally everything FCC chairman Ajapai does, we believe is a story on The Verge right now.
Ajapai eats an apple.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Actually, it'd be a lot easier to write than the very complicated stories you have to write. Dude has just been on a tear. He's been doing stuff. Here's just a list. I'm just going to list them all. I've been writing about Jake has been doing the hard work of reporting out, getting the analysis, doing the work. And then I've been ruthlessly aggregating Jake into my daily news roundup and show notes. But here's just a list of headlines that Jake has published this week alone. Ajapai went to MWC, said net neutrality was a mistake, advocated for a bunch of stuff, including 5G rollouts. Basically yelled at a bunch of European mobile executives and telecom chiefs because he's like, you guys build one infrastructure and then you make people compete on it. We believe in something called facilities-based competition where different kinds of infrastructure compete with each other. Really stern warning from Chairman Pai, which is great. He said that he has no plans to review the AT&T-Time Warner merger because Time Warner isn't selling any broadcast licenses to AT&T. They actually sold off whatever they would. So he doesn't want to look at it. Just let it go. It's going to be happen. Net neutrality, actually, it was its second anniversary, I believe, on Sunday of the vote. And Jake ran a whole thing about industry people like reacting to it. Pai said, broadband infrastructure investment in the United States is at the lowest, historically low levels. There was a great piece in The Consumerist analyzing that based on the public statements of telecom companies. We looked at market caps and stock prices. He's basically walking into a new kind of fight, right? Like you can – if you slice away the data and ignore certain kinds of investment, he might be right. If you just look at a whole at what broadband companies are saying about their investments to their investors, to their shareholders, it's like definitely wrong and all their market caps are way up. Then – we're not even done yet. Then –
this is more of a thunder round. Lightning rounds are like instantaneous and fast. Thunder
this is just all the shit. I'm just going to list the headlines. Just read about it on the site. We don't have to get into it. Then he Tom Wheeler passed a bunch of privacy regulations for internet companies, basically saying you can't share your customers' browsing data. There's all kinds of other stuff. This is important because particularly Verizon bought AOL, wants to buy Yahoo to build an ad tech network. Mm-hmm. So it's not like them getting more of your data helps them serve more ads. So there's this regulation there. All the ISPs were against it because they want to sell more ads. Pi said, you know what? We're going to let the Federal Trade Commission handle this. We want to step out of it. Halted the implementation of that order in basically a rush. He announced he was going to halt it on a Friday, rolled it out on a Tuesday. Like, dude's moving. And then today, this is still going. Today, the Trump administration pulled the nomination of Obama's final FCC chairman. This is like way wonky. And we don't know who they're going to nominate yet. It's like a whole thing. So
wait,
now,
who's left then at this point?
Well, there's three people left. There's a rule at the FCC of the five commissioners, no more than three can be from the same party. But historically, the tradition is the opposing party in Congress says, you should just nominate those two. And then the president says, sure, whatever. And then nominates those two. The president gets to nominate the chairman. So there's always like a 3-2 majority for the executive party. But nobody knows if, you know, Trump doesn't have a good history of following tradition. So he may nominate a couple of independents that are, you know, basically what's Enos, independents in name only.
Yeah, yeah, that's a phrase.
It's like a possibility.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just out there. Like, I was joking with Jake today. Like, the FCC, most of the FCC's votes historically are unanimous. Mm. There are votes on things like, let's spend more money on 911 services. And everyone's like, sure. Or there are votes like, let's let people use federal funds to build broadband instead of copper or telephone lines. And I was like, yeah, it's unanimously passed. Hmm. Right now, yep. We're in a place where there's only three commissioners. To pass anything, the FCC has to have three votes. One of those commissioners is a Democrat, two of them are Republicans. So they don't even have the votes to do anything. So they got to get through this whole thing. And on top of it, the chairman's like, what if we just, I've got this red pen. I'm gonna use it a bunch. It's like a crazy, like this agency does not usually make this many waves. It's not. I've covered the FCC for a long time. It's not usually this newsworthy on like a day-to-day, hour-by-hour basis. And it's the one that's in charge of the internet. So we don't have to like get super into it. I just wanted to point out we are covering the hell out of the FCC right now. I think it's super interesting. And
I think we need to move our strategy. Everybody's been tweeting at AgitPi and we've been retweeting. Great.
No, I emailed.
But I don't think it's working.
No, it's... I emailed that. It's not just a Twitter-based strategy. Like, I'm in contact with the FCC, and what they are continually saying to me is The Verge is definitely on the list. You know, he's new, and we're going to come around. So I think we should keep tweeting at him. AgitPi, at AgitPi FCC. Just let him know. Yeah. It's working. Right. It's working more than you think, is what I would say.
Hmm. Okay.
He definitely knows what the Vergecast is. He definitely knows who Jake is, who Dieter is, who I am. He's aware of us. And I think he, from what I know of him, he probably wants to have this debate. But I think he, like I said, he's in a weird political moment. He doesn't have the votes, right? Like he needs human bodies on that commission to get the votes he needs. I don't think he wants to engage some like huge ideological debate right now. I think he wants to like have a functioning agency and then move on. But we'll see. So keep tweeting at him. Okay, actual lightning round. It's actually more mobile news. I'm just going to read the things off. And Dieter, you're gonna respond to them. The first one.
Okay.
YouTube announced streaming TV service, $35 a month. You get all the networks. You don't get football because Verizon owns the rights to football on mobile, so there's some weird exceptions in there. I think it's a brilliant idea. What do you think?
I think it's a fine idea. I think that the inability to know precisely which networks you're getting is a problem that every streaming service has. It's interesting to me that Google was like, yeah, whatever, that's the way it is and is dealing with it. And that everybody is in that camp except for Apple, who's like, no, we're going to make the perfect service.
Paul.
When you say the word YouTube, that seems like the place I want to watch videos.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's not going to be everything, it's just like, I don't want to buy something that's going to disappoint me on a regular basis.
But what they're going to have is – so I think it's – well, Ross, you go first.
I mean, half the stuff's going to be end up pirated on YouTube anyway. It's not going to pay.
So what they're going to have, which I think is huge – we write for every live event how to watch this online. Mm. And it's like a long, complicated post. And every one of those posts, I will just be honest with the audience, should end with, you will be disappointed by one of these things in one way or another. YouTube is going to at least have the four big networks. So when it's how to watch the NFL playoffs online or how to watch – well, not the – fuck.
See, that's what I was saying. Yeah. That's what I was saying.
Well, it's just that Verizon deal. When it's how to watch the Oscars online or how to watch presidential debates
do
online.
Do we know it's going to be the Oscars? Though, right?
Yeah, because the networks have the rights to that. It's the NFL that cuts up its rights in like that specific way.
But so no, they've got the big YouTube hole, is missing a bunch of channels.
They're missing a bunch of channels, but they're not missing the four major networks.
What about like the Olympics? I feel like every big event the Olympics are on NBC. Specially negotiated rights.
That's here's just why like I'm switching. Experience. I've tried Sling. I'm currently trying View. Here's why I'm switching to YouTube.
Yeah.
I trust YouTube to make a good app for
yes,
everything that I
right,
use.
Right.
My PlayStation,
crashes.
My Apple TV, my iPhone, my iPad, my Android phone, shit, my Xbox.
Right. And they like, have an unlimited
nobody
free,
else can say that.
Unlimited free cloud DVR. Like, this is the winner. Right. The thing that's held everyone back is they don't have all the channels. But really what's held them back is they all have bad apps and their services are a little bit flaky. YouTube is not going to have that problem.
This is such a good app.
They're just gonna build on a thing that people like. And maybe they don't offer you everything, but they will get there in some way, somehow, eventually, while everyone else is still trying to catch up to our app doesn't crash.
The excitement about picking this service is they're going to change the name of it every 6 months.
YouTube
like
Green.
They do with Google Play, All Access, and YouTube Red.
BlueTube.
Burgundy.
I just think this is the service. And I will say YouTube is executing better than Google as a whole. But this is a service when I read about it, I'm like, this is the right idea. I can't believe YouTube is beating Apple to this service. Mm-hmm. If Apple announced this service with these restrictions and said, this is the new Apple TV, pay Apple $35 a month, get these channels, I think a lot of people would cut their cable.
Yeah.
Like instantly.
I used to think that, but like Apple is like I like use iTunes and then like takes 10 seconds to load each different page. And
yeah. I tried to skip ahead in a track in Apple Music yesterday on my desktop. It just beachballed for 30 seconds.
whoa, fast forward.
It was like, I can't do this, man. Just, you live in real time now. So why don't you just slow down? Amazon leaked its own home security camera on Amazon.com. That's where the images were located. I got found out. Peter, yeah. What do you think?
Fine. Whatever. I mean, sure. Go ahead and buy an Amazon security camera.
And well, maybe it's like an Echo with a camera. That'd be wild.
Yeah, probably they'll stick that on there because why not?
Be a really weird Alexa integration.
I don't know. I can't get excited about security cameras.
Yeah, I mean like canaries sell well.
Yeah,
Nest is a whole business that's built. Half of it is security cameras. I guess one third of it, if you count the smoke detector, but I don't think that's.
I mean, you want
a
security camera to have a good app and a good like online service and like backup and all that stuff. And Nest has done pretty well with that. A few other Canary, I guess, is fine. But like, I don't know if you've like, I haven't tried Amazon Music in a hot minute, but I kind of suspect that that'll be kind of crappy. It like I look at this, I'm like, oh, Amazon looks at what sells well, what's actually surprisingly easy to make, but nobody knows it, and then they make a cheap version themselves.
Yeah, Apple also makes $10 keyboards and $10 mice.
Yeah,
and $5 cables. It's just looking at it, not knowing a lot about it, looks a little bit more on that end than the Echo end.
I think if you are, yeah, probably. But if you're Googling to buy a camera. And Amazon's like, this one has free cloud storage if you're a Prime member. And everyone else is like, $9 a month. Mm. You're just going to buy this.
Yep.
One. This is why it's in the lightning round. Spotify preparing to launch lossless audio.
Sorry, title.
I think this is like a ruthless move by Spotify to kill Tidal.
Well, how? I would venture to guess that very little of Tidal's market share has anything to do with lossless, and it's all about those random exclusives that then you forget to cancel Tidal.
Yeah. So I oddly disagree with you. I think a lot of like – I've been just reading stereo forums, just mm-hmm. a thing I'm doing mm-hmm. lately. They're all on the Tidal train.
It's fine.
Because they all, right? Because they're just being told this is better.
Right.
And then their brains are like, it must be.
Which is exactly how all stereo marketing works.
Yeah, it's amazing. today I looked at a $1,500 HDMI cable online.
What?
Yes, it was amazing. It's covered in diamonds.
Did you have a moment where you're like, maybe?
Yeah. Wait. Did you have a moment where you're like, click?
Yeah. The 50-foot version of the cable, $50,000.
Holy insane. Fuck.
Just an insane market.
What are the radio properties of diamonds?
I don't know. It's so confusing. The comments, just go. It's an AudioQuest HDMI cable. I encourage everyone to go read the reviews. The reviews are like amazing. The question and answers are amazing. Mm-hmm. Like one of the questions is, why is this better than a $10 HDMI cable? And the answer, or what makes this different than a $10 HDMI cable? And the answer is $10,000. anyway, but I will say this. If you are Spotify and your business is your business, like streaming, I think it's Ogg Vorbis files for free and some ads, and then you convert people to your pay tier, you probably incur zero or close to zero cost to re-encode into whatever lossless you're going to do. You probably incur zero or close to zero cost in bandwidth streaming that stuff out. You can just be like, okay, you can have this now. And then people will pay you more money. So you're just getting free money. And Tidal, which their whole business is like, it sounds better. They're like, we have exclusives. Hmm. But then Tidal has to compete with Apple, which has silly money to buy those exclusives. It's kind of like they're getting boxed in a way.
Yeah.
And I don't think the labels want exclusives to happen anymore because they know it's bad for them. Because they don't want to negotiate with every service every time they release an album.
Right.
Also, Spotify, if you just ask them, they'll just be like, you know why those Ed Sheeran tracks are at the top of the chart? Because we put them on every playlist. Like, that's their power. And I don't know. It's a thing. Poor Tidal. It's all over. Is there anything else lightning around that we need to talk about?
Oh, I know what it was.
See? I knew I just had to give you time.
Personal news. I am becoming a Soylent Man.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Bye.
See ya.
All right, go ahead.
It's my middle meal of the day. One bottle of Soylent.
Is it working?
I don't know. 2 days in. This seems fine so far.
Is it great?
I mean, do you want the like the real?
Everyone
you're
wants to know.
Wanting okay. to not sit next
this
to you.
Morning.
That's like the real.
This morning.
Oh, God.
I farted. And. I mean, yeah, I asked you, did you
but
want
that's
the real,
not, like, that's
the
not
real
even,
scoop?
So
what,
did
what
I.
What scoop did you want?
I didn't drink Soylent yesterday. That also happened to me this morning.
Okay, well, here's the thing. It smelled really bad.
Okay. That's the show, everybody.
And then it turned out that we just had a gas leak in our apartment and it wasn't me.
There are so many other things to listen to on both the Verge and Recode side. Walt Mossberg and I have a show called Control Alt Delete.
It wasn't Soylent's fault. Everything's fine.
Peter Kafka
with me
has a show
2 days in
called Recode Soylent Media, which is very serious, reaches heights of intelligence and discourse.
I'm sorry, can we cut this whole part out?
At this moment, we can literally only dream of. Kara Swisher hosts Recode Decode, another deeply intelligent podcast about technology. And Lauren Good hosts Too Embarrassed to Ask. Also, just a well-produced show. It's called Too Embarrassed to Ask, but it's never quite as embarrassing as what just happened here.
Just, all of which
you can listen
you can
to all of those.
Live.
Just whatever you want. You can come back to this moment if you want to feel better about yourself. Anyhow, go find that stuff on iTunes. Listen to it all. I will say it's been like months since we got a review because I've been asking people to like tell a friend. Mm. Review us on iTunes. Make it don't just review the first. This is the first like 50 minutes of the show. Leave the last 10 out. But in your mind, remember that. And then write us a review. Tell your friends about all the other shows. That's great. Once again, I'll remind you that we're live at South by Southwest. If you're going to be in Austin on the 12th and the 14th with National Geographic, that's happening at the Vulcan Gas Company, which will be rebranded and the whole thing. But if you're down there, come down there. If not, look forward to the live shows. That's going to be really fun. And I want to thank our friends at Crizal, No Glare Lenses. If you're glasses, you know, fingerprints, smudges, scratches, glares, constant obstruction to your vision, a huge distraction. So go to Crizal.com to learn more. That's Crizal.com. Start living life in the clear. And that's it. That's the Vergecast, everybody. Rock and roll. Paul. Links and Elf. Snip, snip.